Listening. For items 1 to 10, listen to the interview with a woman engineer and decide whether the statements 1 to 10 are true, A, or false, B, according to the text you hear. You will hear the text twice. You have 20 seconds to look through the items. Now we begin.
For our next guest on A Woman's World, I'd like to welcome to the program Lindsay Barron, Head of Engineering at Swift Aerospace, a very good example of a woman in a man's world.
Good morning.
Lindsay, you're an engineer, but why did you become one? What got you interested?
Well, from a young age, I was always interested in how things work. I chose engineering as a career because I wanted to make things better. Engineering isn't just about testing theories and building models. It's about designing new products and finding new uses for old products. I want to improve the way the world works.
Interesting. And could you tell me a bit about your training?
Well, I studied engineering at university. I was the only woman in the mechanical engineering department.
So how was that?
Well, at first, I felt a bit uncomfortable, but after a while it didn't bother me. People got used to me, and I was treated like anyone else. In fact, sometimes it was a bit of an advantage, because people like to have me in their team.
You're head of engineering now. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I started in a test lab for airplanes. I did stress and fatigue tests there. Basically, I broke things. Doing that sort of research is very important, as it tells you what loads the structures can carry. Then I went into airplane design. I worked on all areas of commercial planes before moving into project management in the aircraft industry.
Could you tell me a bit more about what you do now?
Sure. These days I mainly work in project management. I take ideas for projects and investigate their feasibility. That means I see if the projects are possible to carry out. Next, I develop the objectives and estimate the cost of the project. Then I help the people working on the project to meet their deadlines. I have to make sure projects come in on budget and on schedule.
Now you're head of department and I guess in charge of a lot of men. How do you find that?
Well, it wasn't too easy at first. I had to prove myself. When they could see that I had good practical experience and ability, everything was fine.
I suppose that's true of anyone who's in charge. Okay, Lindsay, finally, what's the best thing about being an engineer?
That's an easy one to answer. I love the challenge of finding solutions to problems. I hope that what I do improves people's lives. For me, engineering is fun, exciting, and satisfying. So let's have more women in engineering in the future.
Thank you very much, Lindsay.
You have 20 seconds to check your answers. Now listen to the text again.
For our next guest on A Woman's World, I'd like to welcome to the program Lindsay Barron, Head of Engineering at Swift Aerospace, a very good example of a woman in a man's world.
Good morning.
Lindsay, you're an engineer, but why did you become one? What got you interested?
Well, from a young age, I was always interested in how things work. I chose engineering as a career because I wanted to make things better. Engineering isn't just about testing theories and building models. It's about designing new products and finding new uses for old products. I want to improve the way the world works.
Interesting. And could you tell me a bit about your training?
Well, I studied engineering at university. I was the only woman in the mechanical engineering department.
So how was that?
Well, at first, I felt a bit uncomfortable, but after a while it didn't bother me. People got used to me, and I was treated like anyone else. In fact, sometimes it was a bit of an advantage, because people like to have me in their team.
You're head of engineering now. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I started in a test lab for airplanes. I did stress and fatigue tests there. Basically, I broke things. Doing that sort of research is very important, as it tells you what loads the structures can carry. Then I went into airplane design. I worked on all areas of commercial planes before moving into project management in the aircraft industry.
Could you tell me a bit more about what you do now?
Sure. These days I mainly work in project management. I take ideas for projects and investigate their feasibility. That means I see if the projects are possible to carry out. Next, I develop the objectives and estimate the cost of the project. Then I help the people working on the project to meet their deadlines. I have to make sure projects come in on budget and on schedule.
Now you're head of department and I guess in charge of a lot of men. How do you find that?
Well, it wasn't too easy at first. I had to prove myself. When they could see that I had good practical experience and ability, everything was fine.
I suppose that's true of anyone who's in charge. Okay, Lindsay, finally, what's the best thing about being an engineer?
That's an easy one to answer. I love the challenge of finding solutions to problems. I hope that what I do improves people's lives. For me, engineering is fun, exciting, and satisfying. So let's have more women in engineering in the future.
Thank you very much, Lindsay.
You have 20 seconds to check your answers. Task 2. For items 11 to 15, listen to the dialogue. Choose the correct answer A, B, or C to answer questions 11 to 15. You will hear the text only once. You now have 25 seconds to study the questions. Now we begin. Hi, Richard. How did you get on in the interview? Did it go well?
I don't know, really. I think so.
So, what kind of questions did they ask you?
Well, the editor of the newspaper did most of the talking. She asked me why I wanted to be a foreign correspondent, and obviously I was expecting that. I said that I'd traveled a lot when I was a student, that I enjoyed traveling, and that now I was a journalist, I wanted it to be part of my job. Then she wanted to know what parts of the world I was interested in.
What did you say?
Well, all the Arab countries and South America. I told her that I also knew Brazil and Argentina well, so they would be interesting to report on.
I see. What else did she ask you? Those questions don't sound too difficult.
No, they weren't really. Well, the subject of languages came up. She asked if I spoke any foreign languages.
Ha! That was an easy one for you.
Yeah, I told her I was bilingual in English and Arabic, and that I spoke Spanish and Portuguese fluently. She seemed pretty impressed.
I'm sure she was. Did she offer you the job on the spot?
Not quite. She wanted to know where I'd gone to university, and if I'd taken any further qualifications. She also wanted to know what articles I'd written, and so on. There was only one difficult question, really.
Oh, yeah?
She asked me what qualities a journalist needed to be a foreign correspondent. I wasn't sure how to answer that one.
How did you handle it?
Well, I said obviously I'd never done the job, but I had thought about it. I said that foreign correspondents had to be able to make decisions without waiting for people to tell you what to do. So they needed to show initiative when they were reporting in a foreign country.
I think that's a really good answer. Was she pleased?
She seemed to be. Anyway, there were a few more questions. Then at the end, she asked if I was physically fit. I said that I went to the gym 3 times a week, and so I should be.
Good answer. Do you think you'll get the job?
I've got a chance, I think, but I wasn't the only candidate. I'll just keep my fingers crossed and hope for the best.
You have 1 minute to complete your answer. Integrated listening and reading. Read the abstract of a critical review below, then listen to part of an interview with the author of the review. You will notice that some ideas coincide and some differ in them. Answer questions 16 to 25 by choosing A, if the idea is expressed in both materials, B, if it can be found only in the reading text, C, if it can be found only in the audio recording, and D, if neither of the materials expresses the idea. Now you have 7 minutes to read the text below. Now listen to part of an interview with the author of the review and then do the tasks, questions 16 to 25, comparing the text above and the interview. You will hear the interview twice.
When did you realize that you wanted to develop a career in atmospheric science?
I grew up in the Philippines, in Manila, and Manila is a very, very polluted city. It's one of the worst megacities. When I was a child, I got very sick because of gas, heat, high temperatures, but mostly from dust in the air. My sister has asthma. We are allergic to a lot of the pollutants there. So I was very interested when I was young in environmental problems.
What is a megacity?
A megacity usually refers to a city with a population over 10 million. But it's loosely defined because it depends on the boundary. There are more than 20 megacities in the world, but there are also at least 100 cities with populations of between 7 and 10 million. And these cities are often adjacent to many other cities, and they form a metropolitan area. Many of these cities with these very large urban centers have very similar problems as a large megacity. I was in China, for example, and they were telling me in China that the largest megacities are not Beijing and Shanghai, but there are others that are even larger, large metropolitan areas with surrounding cities that actually become like a megalopolis.
Why should we care about pollution?
Why should people care about pollution? There are many harmful effects from pollution. I think the driving force for studying air pollution really is the effect on the health of the population. Ozone, particulates, and other air toxins can really affect people's health. It's very expensive when people get sick, and when children miss school because of ozone alerts. And elderly people are also affected with premature mortality.
Describe the scale of the effects of pollution.
In a megacity or an urban center, you have pollution from the burning of fossil fuels, from cars, from industry, from burning trash. The pollutants that you burn locally would affect the health of the population and the air quality. There is also the regional impact, which would affect ecosystems, and the global impact that would affect climate. But there is also this intercontinental transport of pollutants. So a source that is a megacity could be transported far away. That is why we are very concerned about air pollution.
How is it possible for pollution to be a global and not just local issue?
Some of the pollutants are water-soluble, so they can be washed out. But some of them react in the presence of sunlight. They transform into other species, and they have no boundary. Once you emit something to the atmosphere, pollution can transport from one region to another.
You'll hear the interview again in 30 seconds. Now listen to the interview again.
When did you realize that you wanted to develop a career in atmospheric science?
I grew up in the Philippines, in Manila, and Manila is a very, very polluted city. It's one of the worst megacities. When I was a child, I got very sick because of gas, heat, high temperatures, but mostly from dust in the air. My sister has asthma. We are allergic to a lot of the pollutants there. So I was very interested when I was young in environmental problems.
What is a megacity?
A megacity usually refers to a city with a population over 10 million, but it's loosely defined because it depends on the boundary. There are more than 20 megacities in the world, but there are also at least 100 cities with populations of between 7 and 10 million. And these cities are often adjacent to many other cities, and they form a metropolitan area. Many of these cities with these very large urban centers have very similar problems as a large megacity. I was in China, for example, and they were telling me in China that the largest megacities are not Beijing and Shanghai, but there are others that are even larger, large metropolitan areas with surrounding cities that actually become like a megalopolis.
Why should we care about pollution?
Why should people care about pollution? There are many harmful effects from pollution. I think the driving force for studying air pollution really is the effect on the health of the population. Ozone, particulates, and other air toxins can really affect people's health. It's very expensive when people get sick, and when children miss school because of ozone alerts. And elderly people are also affected with premature mortality.
Describe the scale of the effects of pollution.
In a megacity or an urban center, you have pollution from the burning of fossil fuels, from cars, from industry, from burning trash. The pollutants that you burn locally would affect the health of the population and the air quality. There is also the regional impact, which would affect ecosystems, and the global impact that would affect climate. But there's also this intercontinental transport of pollutants. So a source that is a megacity could be transported far away. That is why we are very concerned about air pollution.
How is it possible for pollution to be a global and not just local issue?
Some of the pollutants are water-soluble, so they can be washed out. But some of them react in the presence of sunlight. They transform into other species, and they have no boundary. Once you emit something to the atmosphere, pollution can transport from one region to another.
Now you have 5 minutes to finish the task and transfer your answers to the answer sheet. This is the end of the integrated task. Now you can start working on your reading task.